say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you.
Hello everyone and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo and oh man, I know all of you are out there right now and you're kind of going, I am in a job that quite honestly, I'm not sure I want to stay in. Jay, let me just say this to you. I'm in a job and quite frankly, it sucks. I don't like it. I can't get out of it. I feel stuck. I feel like I'm the money's good, but I don't like the people I work with. I feel like I've moved way beyond it. I wanted to move up. Somebody took my position. They took it away from me and I'm discouraged and I'm angry and I don't know. And I feel like I'm helpless and hopeless. I have no answers. That's why you come to this show, because you know why? I find people who have those answers. And guess what I did today? I found her. Terry Boyle McDougall. She wrote it. It's called Winning the Game at Work. She is going to help you. She is. Get out your note. Get out your pads. Okay. Get yourself a pen. Feel free to ask questions while we're live, right? Because you know what? Here's the secondary title. Let me read this. Career Happiness and Success on Your Own Terms. Ding, 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 ding. Does that ring a bell for you? Does that help you somewhat? I think it does, doesn't it? Well, we're going to talk to her. She's going to be outstanding. But before we get to her, you know what we do every week, right? We'll walk you through the four areas of your life. We are four-part people. We are physical, mental, emotional, spiritual people, right? And we work on our training every week on the show, right? I ask you to evaluate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 when it comes to your training in these four areas. 1 being, oh, my training could not be any worse. And then 10 being, oh man, my training is awesome. All right, so in the area of physical, for instance, so we can evaluate yourself on, you know, getting enough exercise, eating right, drinking enough water, getting enough sleep. By the way, it's kind of interesting that Terry talks about those are kind of some self-care things that you probably should be thinking about doing, you know, when it comes to winning the game at work. So anyway, so when you put yourself and you start evaluating yourself, scale of 1 to 10, 5 being average, how would you say you're doing out there, right? All right, that's your first number. Second number, all right, is your intellectual or mental number, right? Truth is, if you think that sitting on a couch and letting information coming at you is learning, sadly, you would be wrong. What you want to be an active participant in your intellectual growth. And by the way, you know, as a psychological professional, right, we have two halves of the brain, right? Half is creative, you know, left half is logical. We should be working both halves. By the way, great way to do that. Read a book. I don't know. It's just an idea. But, you know, taking up an instrument, learning a foreign language, all of those things, you know, just active, being an active participant in your learning. By the way, interestingly enough, Terry talks about the importance of being a learner. Right. Matter of fact, she's even got a study from University of Iowa. Yeah, the Hawkeyes. She's got a study in there from 2015 about, you know what? You think an old dog can't learn new tricks? Think again, because she's got the answer in there too. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you say you're doing in your intellectual growth? All right, that's your second number. By the way, whatever the number is, don't go, oh, I'm a miserable failure. Right? Don't go into that mindset. Right, because that's a dark hole, and your gremlins are going to show up. Oh, yes, she says something about gremlins too in her book too. I forgot to say that. Anyway, so you don't want to go down that dark hole, all right? Because truth is, whatever the number is, but that's a place we can start so we can correct ourselves. Okay, all right. Third number is the emotional number, and how we evaluate ourselves emotionally is like this: we look at two areas. One is how well are you able to control your emotions under stress and pressure. So funny that I say that, because Terry talks about you're able to control your emotions, just like I've been saying on the show. Because you know you have control of them. So how well are you able to control yours under stress or pressure? Right? Secondly, how well are you able to tap into and understand the emotions of others? Oof, that was a little harder, isn't it? Especially if the other is a boss like Shelley, who's really, really angry. She's laughing because she knows I read that part of the book too. Right? But if you have a boss who's like, you know, like flies off the handle, how are you able to really tap in? Right? So what number would you give yourself there? It's three numbers. Fourth number, spiritual. You know, it's interesting. Terry talks about the word faith in the book, that you have to have faith. You have to believe in the things not seen. You have to call things into attention. You know, you have to be intentional about the things that you don't see. And the fact of the matter, she talks about that, our words that we speak carry vibrations. We can create things out of nothing. The word spirit in the Webster's Dictionary is basically breath. You know, it's breath, it's life. You know, when things go bad in your world, you know, what do you run to? Because whatever that is that you run to first, that's your God. Whether it is God, whatever it may be. The question is it working for you? Is it really working for you? If you have a higher power, is that working for you? Is that relationship working for you? Is it changing you? Does it give you peace in the midst of chaos? Does it give you joy? Right? Because you're walking by faith. You put your key in your car and you started it by faith. You drank your cup of coffee believing it wasn't poisoned by faith. You walked across the street when that little white hand on the crosswalk went up believing nobody would run you over. That's faith. We walk by faith every day. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you think your spiritual area is going? Right, those four areas, right, those numbers, right, are all like the error in your tires of your car. If they're not full to the right height level, what happens to your car? It doesn't run right, does it? It runs off the road. It runs over the edge. It'll lean. And eventually, over time, it ruins the vehicle. It doesn't run efficiently. It doesn't run effectively. So we want to bring our air tires to the right pressure all at the same time. And speaking of someone who has done that and does that magically and wonderfully, her name is Terry Boyle McDougall. She is an executive coach, author, speaker, entrepreneur. She is a longtime veteran of the corporate world where she led marketing efforts and advised senior leaders in companies large and small. Since 2017, she's helped high-achieving professionals find the sweet spot where professional success and personal happiness optimally coexist. As an author and a coach, her mission is, I would say her purpose also, is to help people create their personal definition of success so that they can, wait for it, win the game of work on their own terms. For more information, you can go visit terrybmcdougall.com. That's TerryBMcDougall.com. So ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show and welcome for the first time ever, Terry Boyle McDougall. Welcome to A New Direction, Terry.
Oh, Jay, it's great to be here. I'm so excited. And boy, that book sounds great. I've forgotten a lot of the stuff I wrote in there.
Well, you should. It's a great book. It really is a great book. And I mean, as you can see, I was able to pull, I mean, literally everything into my four areas of my life because I found that you've written it, it seems, intentionally or unintentionally, with the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done a lot of personal work in those areas. And, you know, I coach people who I used to be.
Right.
So I've lived a lot of the things that I write about in the book. And, you know, I used a lot of stories from my career and, you know, kind of tapped into how I felt during those times and how hopeless I felt and, you know, how I'd lost confidence, et cetera. But, you know, as time went on, I learned some of these lessons the hard way.
Right.
And I am here to help other people not have to stub their toe so many times or fall on their face in order to not only be professionally successful, but also be happy. Like, what is the purpose if we're not feeling good and happy about how we're investing our time and energy?
We spend so much time at work. You know, most of us spend at least one third of our day, you know, at work. And if you work remotely, sometimes it's longer and sometimes it's not just 5 days a week. It often can be six, maybe even 7 days a week, depending on what you're doing. Yeah. And so work is important for sure. And you really bring up a question in the book. If we're going to spend that much time doing it, it should be fulfilling for us. It shouldn't be just something that we're doing for a paycheck, should it?
No, not at all. And I think one of the biggest myths that people have about work is that it can't be enjoyable, that it's not work if it's not hard, you know, and I really think that when people can figure out, like, what do I like to do and what am I good at, and then go out and find a place in the marketplace where you can trade.
Right.
And what do I enjoy doing? What am I good at? It doesn't have to be hard. You don't need to be grinding it out every day.
Right. Yeah, there's something to be said, isn't there, that when we find work that fits our gifting and our abilities and our talents, and when we find that work, it can be hard, but you know what? We enjoy it.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Right? I mean, I played football in college, right? Can I tell you something? It wasn't always easy.
Right.
But what I would give to play it again.
Yeah.
What I wouldn't give to go through the grind again. Right? I think that's what we miss, and that you're trying to get at the book, you know, is, you know, hold on here. Work doesn't have to be this drudgery that you hate.
No. I mean, I really believe that each of us were given gifts, and we were sent here to Earth to figure out what our purpose is.
Yep.
And, you know, there's a reason why we're here.
Yeah.
And I think that we each need to figure out what that is and realize that there is room for us here on Earth to provide our gifts, to share our gifts. And, you know, so many people start with, you know, oh, let me go to LinkedIn or Indeed and find there's no jobs that fit me.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of like fitting yourself into a box rather than, you know, maybe going out and finding somebody who can use the skills that you have. And, you know, like, what would our lives be like if we could just, like, figure out what we like to do and just do it and get paid for it?
Right. Right.
You know, and you know, I also think that it's kind of interesting what you were saying. I think that there's a little bit of a difference between, I hope I can get their wording right, like, it's one thing to be challenged, right? And maybe run up against things where we're like, oh, I'm not really sure what to do in this situation, but we're doing it for a purpose that feels good to us,
mm-hmm.
right? That gives us the energy to keep going towards the goal versus when we have to just like force ourselves and maybe even shame ourselves into, you know, or judge ourselves. I'm not doing well. A lot of people motivate themselves through fear. I mean, I can't tell you how many people.
Oh yeah.
I've coached them that they're like, oh my God, I'm afraid I'm going to get fired. You know,
right.
and they use that to try to motivate themselves. And that is a very expensive way to motivate yourself, you know, to that fight or flight. There's higher levels of energy that we can tap into where we're in the flow. You know, we're like doing fantastic work and we're not having to grind it out every day. And those typically, you know, if we look out and we think about people that we admire, usually they've found that sweet spot where they're like, hey, this is my gift and this is what I'm going to offer to people. Mm. And, you know, not that they're not challenged, but that they enjoy it.
Right.
And that's just a higher, easier level of energy to exist within, and it's much more sustainable than, you know, oh my God, I'm going to get fired.
Mm.
You know, there's no energy in that.
No.
It's fear.
Yeah, it is. Well, let's dig into part one and chapter one right away. It's called part one, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is entitled "What's Your Objective?" Which is brilliant. By the way, this book is, I told her before the show, it's like having three books in one. It's just, I'm just telling you, it's an ambitious work, but it's really, really thoughtful of great information for you. Chapter one, Terry's entitled "Work is a Game." So answer the question that everybody has in their mind. How can work be a game?
Well, let's, you know, work, there's an objective to work, right? And for most organizations, it's to make a profit. And we as employees or as business owners need to figure out, how am I going to create value for this organization? And a lot of people don't think of work that way. you know, they think of it as like, hey, here's my desk with my chair, or, you know, here I am in front of my computer at home, and I just have to come and work, you know, 9 to 5 and do the stuff, send the emails, whatever. And that's my job. And it's not. And, you know, when people are confused about why they're not, you know, they're not moving up, it's because they don't understand the rules of the game, which is they have to add value. Mm-hmm. And many people never think about, why am I here? You know, I'm not here to come and put my rear end in the seat for 8 or 9 hours a day. I'm here to create value. Mm. And really, there's only three ways to do that. You're going to do that by helping the organization make money, save money, or reduce risk, which is saving money as well. And, you know, I totally understand that not everybody is out there selling, right? But right. Everybody should be contributing to how the organization is going to more easily, you know, or be more profitable.
Right.
And so it might be that, you know, you're the receptionist and you're going to be as helpful and as friendly and, you know, be thinking about how you can do things better for the organization, right? Because eventually that is going to have an impact. Like if you're mean to the customers that come in and then they're not going to come back. Mm. So, you know, just be thinking about how can you do this? That's really the game. The okay. game is like, how do you add value?
Okay. Well, okay. So let's talk about the play as.
Okay. Yeah. Now, so, one thing I'll tell you.
Yeah. Cause you've got these people, you talk about these players. People. Yeah. The corporate yeah. players.
The players. One thing that a lot of people I coach will say to me is that corporate politics, blah, I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Right.
And I believe the reason for that is because, well, first of all, in my mind, politics equates to influence. Okay. And the reason why many of us, and at one point I felt this way too, don't want to have anything to do with politics is because of the players. Mm. You know, these are people that come in and they're fancy suit and, you know, they ingratiate themselves with all the right people and they talk a good game and they don't actually add a lot of value. You know, they come into the meeting and they say all this stuff and then they magically walk out without any assignments. They take advantage of other people and take credit for their work, et cetera. And I think for a lot of us, we see those people and we're like, how'd that guy or how'd that gal get promoted? They don't do anything, right? But they have influence and they use the influence to make others think that they're adding value. And so for the rest of us that maybe feel like, well, I'm authentic and I'm a hard worker and I don't want to be like that person. Well, of course you don't want to be like that person, but if you are able to do a good job, you're serious about how you really add value and you learn how to influence within the organization, you're going to be unstoppable. Mm. Okay. It's going to be because eventually those people are outed. You know, eventually somebody looks and they're like, that guy's actually an empty suit. Like he's in meetings all the time and he never does any work or she never does any work. But if you are adding value, they're going to be like, hey, you know, that person is creating value and, you know, they've got the relationships, they're able to negotiate, they're able to get their ideas heard. And that's really an unstoppable combo when you do the work and you've got the influence.
Yeah. See, I think, you know, having been in situations where I've seen the play as, you know, throughout, you know, the career. And, but, you know, when I was younger, I didn't notice, I guess I didn't notice because I didn't care. But then I noticed that honestly, they got the promotions and as they got promotions, they said even less because they got so promoted, right. That they didn't have to answer to anybody.
They could just sit in the corner office.
Right. They didn't answer to anybody. Yeah. It was, they held meetings. That's what they did. They held meetings. Nobody really knew what they did. They right. really didn't know what, we didn't know what they did. They just right. had meetings and they would tell us, this is what we got to do. Okay. Well,
right.
Where did that come from? Right. Mm-hmm. Whose idea was that? Right. But that we right. never knew it. And it was because they were so well connected. And I have no idea.
They're higher.
Yeah. They were so well connected to the powers that be. I mean, that's all. That's all that you could say about it. Really interesting. The book's fascinating, by the way. The book, Winning the Game of Work, Career, Happiness, and Success on Your Own Terms. Actually brilliant. Find it on Amazon. You're listening to Terry McDougall right here on A New Direction. Hey, folks, listen, Epic Physical Therapy, my physical therapist. They should be your physical therapist, too. If they're not your physical therapist, you should call them. Listen, whether recovering from injury, surgery, suffering everyday aches and pains, professional athlete, non-athlete, look, if you want your Epic relief, your Epic recovery, your Epic results, don't look any further. Go to epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. Linda Kraft, Team Realtors, they have been helping people transition for more than 37 years. Why do I say transition? Because they don't sell homes. They don't help people buy homes. They help people transition in their life. Think about it. Every place you've ever lived has been a life transition, right? And that's what they help people do. And they've been doing it for 37 plus years. And they want to help you make your next transition too, whether you're selling or buying. Get to the experts. Get to Linda Kraft Team Realtors. That's lindacraft.com. LindaCraft. com. And big shout out to Hint Water. Hint, the official beverage of DBTV. That's right. You're watching us on DBTV on Apple TV. You're watching us on DBTV on cable companies in Canada. Hey, everybody in Canada, you know, and all sorts of other countries around the world. We're available to 250 million homes. Yes, Terry, you are on 250, Woo. Potentially 250 million homes all around the world. And you know what? Hint Water is the official beverage. So listen, get yourself a Hint. That's just a Hint. We're back. Oh, yeah. Okay. We're back right now. We're back here with Terry Boyle McDougall, her book, Winning the Game of Work. All right, Terry. So let's keep moving on ahead. One of the things you say in this first chapter, and by the way, we're still in chapter one, it takes more than talent. When you say that, what do you mean? It takes more than talent.
Well, what I mean by that is that you need a strategy for your career. I think that one of the things that I observed is that I was a good student and I was just kind of used to, you know, okay, I'm going to do the test, write the paper, whatever. And I was used to just being successful by just doing what was asked. And one of the things that you find a lot of times, especially if I worked for a long time in banking, and there are just lots of smart people there, right? So it's not like in school where, like, okay, if you're a top student that you're going to be able to distinguish yourself just by, you know, being smart. There's lots of smart people right. when you get into certain organizations. And if you expect that, hey, you're just going to do whatever you did to help yourself be successful in school, at work, that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It kind of goes back to what I was just saying. You've got to, you know, step back from just doing the work and understand the context of what you're doing and how that's contributing to the success of the organization.
Right.
And it really, you know, if we take the whole idea of work being a game, it's like learn the rules of the game, right? Don't just come in and you know, kind of be used by the players, you know, understand like the, you know, who's in power here. A lot of times it's not the person who has, you know, leader on their business card.
Right.
Right. There might be, you've got to really observe what's going on around you. Right. You're not going to be able to walk in on day one and be able to understand all the dynamics, but start not just, you know, a lot of people get attached to like, this is the way it should be. Well, guess what? It's going to be different than how it should be.
Right.
Notice what is and play according to what is, not what you think should be, because you're going to burn up a lot of energy, you know, saying like, this is how it should be. And I'm upset because it's not that way.
Yeah, I think we're misinformed or we're delusioned, maybe all of the above. but I think we believe that talent is enough and that if we hire talented people, we're going to be successful. And that if you have talent, you know, that should be enough. I'm the most talented person in here. It's not.
Mm-hmm. It's not. And a lot of times, I mean, I guess I was a little bit surprised about that as well, that, you know, things get done through, you know, working with people.
Right.
And sometimes you can have someone who's, you know, maybe not technically talented, but they're very talented in terms of, you know, building relationships,
right.
Building the influence, you know, being friendly,
right?
Because people want to work with people that they enjoy working with.
Right.
And it can be easy sometimes to say like, oh, that guy's just a glad hander, or that guy, you know, she's moving up because she's got a relationship with this person or that person. Well, all of us have that opportunity.
Right.
And I think that we need to realize that if you want to have impact and influence within the organization, you're going to do that through relationships.
Right. And sometimes the most talented people are not good teammates.
Right. They're not. And a lot of times I see this and I coach on this a lot, where, you know, somebody is like just brilliant and they come into an organization, they quickly move from individual contributor to leader, and they will say to me like, why is this guy on my team not doing this? Because this is what I would do. And I say to them like, look, if that person saw things the way that you do and had the talent and ability that you have, they would be sitting in your seat. Okay. You've got to lead everyone.
Right.
Not just somebody who's as talented as you.
Right.
And so having that self-awareness and also valuing like, hey, I know I'm good at this, right? And maybe some of the people on my team aren't. So what are the opportunities here for me to bring everybody along? You know, and you're going to have to coach the A team or lead the A team, the B team, and the C team, right? You can't only lead the A team,
right?
Because you're going to be leaving a lot of capacity on the table if you're like, hey, you can't run as fast as the rest of us.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you're just going to cause a lot of negativity and other issues. And, you know, it's what keeps me in business.
No, I get it.
I don't think people want to work in that environment.
No, they don't. I agree with you. Let's move on to chapter two, because this is important piece entitled, What Kind of Player Are You? Getting to Know Yourself. I just had on the show a few weeks ago, Dr. Ryan Goffredson talked about success mindsets, and he brought up a piece of research from Tasha Urich that said basically 80% of us are just completely unaware of ourselves.
Sure.
This is such an important piece though, isn't it? To get some self-awareness when you're in a job and you're trying to win this game of work.
Yes.
Help us get there.
Yeah. Well, everybody has a perspective that is unique to them. And also, the behavior that people exhibit makes sense to them from their perspective. Okay. And so often we can look and be like, why is that person trying to make my life miserable? Right. And I mean, I've done it.
Sure,
I mean, you know, back before I was quite as evolved as I am now, I still do it sometimes, but
sure.
If we can recognize that, you know, I would say like 99% of people come to work every day wanting to do a good job and be appreciated for what they bring. And they're doing what they do because to them it makes sense. Mm. And I think we need to recognize that and really seek to understand, not, you know, be so judgmental and to say that, like what I just said, you know, and your previous question, which is, this is how I would do it. Why is that person not doing it the way I would do it? Well, because they're not you.
Right.
You know, and so if we can like sort of, I mean, I say this all the time, like for most high achieving people, when they're faced with a challenge, they zoom in, you know, they're like, oh, I got to do more. I got to take on more. I got to go faster, blah, blah, blah. And I think it's important to zoom out and look at the big picture. I know you said you played football. It's really about like getting up into the stands so you can see the whole playing field. Right. And you can see the opportunities. You can see where things are breaking down, because it's usually not with the person that's not responding to your email or who's, you know, doing something to make your life harder at work. It's a lot of times it has nothing to do with them personally, but yet we'll feel like, oh my gosh, that, you know, that person's making my life at work miserable, right? Yeah. Well, maybe there's other things going on, right? Maybe there's issues with the structure. Maybe their boss is a jerk. Maybe they don't have clarity on their role. It could be any number of things.
You know, it's interesting. You brought up the football analogy again. You know, we watched film from back
exactly.
when they didn't. We didn't watch film from a GoPro.
Right.
Right. I mean, right. They didn't put a GoPro. Right. You're not watching film from the GoPro. You're watching it from above or at different angles that you could see what was going on. And yeah, I think the zooming out is really, really important. And by the way, you have a subtitle here, Losing Touch with Yourself, and then followed right up with The Trap of High Achievement. And you talked about Dr. Tom DeLonge, who's Harvard.
His research.
Yeah, his research is great, right? And you talk about the high need for achievement types, which you've already just briefly alluded to. Let's talk about them and their addiction, because there is really these HNA types, and that means high need achievement types. Let's talk about that, them and their, because there's a lot of those people listening to the show.
Yes. They're
and,
my,
and watching.
They're my customers. All of them.
If you're a high need for achievement, you might want to call Terry McDougall.
Yes. So let's go back to childhood, right?
I love it.
Where, you know, when we're babies, when we're toddlers, we're very connected to what we want, right?
Right.
It's like when you're a baby, when your diaper's wet or you're hungry, you cry to get your needs met. You are not thinking, oh, mom and dad are busy or whatever. You are crying to get your needs met. But as we grow up, we get socialized, which, you know, it's a necessary evil
for us to
be socialized. And we start to, rather than like saying, what do I want? And I'm going to cry or I'm going to throw myself on the floor like a 2 or 3 year old would do and have a tantrum. We start to put off. We're rewarded for putting off our needs a little bit. You know, when we're going to tune into like, what does mom want? What does dad want? What does the teacher want? Okay, well, if I listen to what they want me to do, if I do what they want me to do, and then I'm going to get a gold star on my paper, or I'm going to get dessert after dinner, or whatever we're rewarded with. But as time goes on, for the high achievers that are good at earning those rewards, after a while, they get addicted to that. And I mean, and we see it a lot, right? With, you know, not only are you're going to be good at school, but maybe you're going to also be like, I'm going to run for class president. I'm going to, you know, also play baseball. And we're looking for those challenges because we like that feeling of getting that reward. And, you know, as time goes on, you know, you work hard in high school so you can get into a good college. You work hard in college to get a good job. And then you get it out there, and I see it a lot, you know, where somebody's been working for 10 years and they've moved up, and they get to a certain point and they're like, you know what? I'm looking for that next thing, right? I want to move up quicker and I'm not. Or they might even say, I'm actually really successful at what I do, but I don't like it. Mm. Well, there's a reason for this, because they have been so tuned in and, might I say, addicted to that external validation that they've actually lost touch with what they really want, you know, internal validation. And as we move up into leadership, there are fewer and fewer people for us to cue off of. You know, like when you're in school, it's like, what does the teacher want? Mm. Right? They're the leader. A lot of times you get into leadership roles and you're charged with making an impact.
Right.
And there's not anybody there to tell you what to do. There's nobody there to pat you on the head and say, good job, Terry. Right. And as a matter of fact, I got to a certain point in my career where I was like, if my boss isn't calling to complain, that's good. And that's it. That's all the feedback that I got. I'd have to just be like, okay, I'm up on the high wire. I don't know if there's a net down there or not, but you know, if he's not shaking the wire and trying to knock me off, and then it's good.
You know what, this just in, cause it's not in your book, but it's just something as you're talking just kind of hits me. You know, when we were in school, you know, as little kids, we were rewarded for not saying anything. We were punished if we said something or we interrupted.
Over
the course of, what did we learn from the time we were in grade school to junior high to high school, and if we went to college, what did we learn? You keep quiet. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to say anything.
Yes.
And then I was a college professor, and as a college professor, you know, I'm now thinking back and I'm going, you know, we say to them, well, there's no such thing as a dumb question, but that's really not true. There really is dumb questions. Okay.
Right.
Okay. And then we want you to talk, but we have trained you for 18 years of your life that you were to be seen and not heard, that you're mm-hmm. not supposed to disrupt. You're not supposed to ask questions. You're just supposed to listen. And then we wonder, well, why are people unable to untangle their own, as you say, untangle their own desires. And then mm-hmm. they struggle with, as you and I mm-hmm. both work with as coaches. And here's the subtitle that you put in, getting back in touch with yourself.
Yeah. 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 I use an analogy in the book that, like, over all of those years where we're being programmed to tune into the needs of others, and, you know, high achievers get good at fulfilling mm. other people's needs, and they're rewarded for that mm. or other people's expectations. It's almost as if there's like a spring that connects us, you know, like a water spring that connects us to that deep well of who we truly are. And we kind of pave over that, because that can get in the way, that can interfere, that can distract us from, like, what does mom want? What does dad want? What does my coach want? So we pave over it. But then when we pave over it, we lose connection. There's not a lot of satisfaction, because we're like, is this all there is? And I see it a lot with people where they're like, okay, I've achieved everything that I wanted to achieve and I don't feel happy.
Right.
It's like, because you're doing this because you thought that was going to bring you satisfaction, rather than really going inside and saying, what is it that I really want? And you can reconnect to that deep wellspring of your inner wisdom, who you really are, your spirit, your soul. You can connect to that, who you were meant to be here. It just can take some work. You know, I think of it as like, okay, there's asphalt across there, but if you look closely, there's like a little dribble of water that's coming up. And if you start like really paying attention to that and start flicking the asphalt away from that, that connection will get stronger and stronger. It's going to take some work, right? Because you've spent many years paving it over. But you can connect to who you truly are. And I really feel like that's where you will value yourself. You'll feel happier. You know, people will even probably, when you get that connection, they're going to be like, wow, you look younger. Mm. Did you do something? Did you get your hair? Did you lose
right.
weight?
Right.
It's because you're going to be like, I'm happy. I'm connected to my energy. I know why I'm here.
Yeah. We cover that up. We've done such a disservice to ourselves that we've covered that up so much.
Yeah.
That we just have forgotten who we really are, because we've been serving everyone else.
And we think that there's a right, we think there's a way to get an A++ in life.
Right.
And guess what? There isn't. No. Like, the only person that figures that out is you.
Right.
You know, like, nobody, there's no like big teacher or, you know, anybody that's going to come along and be like, hey, you aced it.
The bosses that come by going, hey, Terry, I got your gold star for the day. Let me go paste it on the wall for you. I'm going to paste it right on your door. Look over here. Right. Here's your gold star. Nobody's doing that.
Yeah.
And then we get disillusioned, right? We got disillusioned because
we feel like, oh, I'm not good enough. And, you know,
I've always been graded. I've been graded since I've been a little kid, all through college, all through grad school. I was graded. You got an MBA. You were graded.
Yeah.
And then you go to work And then all of a sudden, I'm not getting any daily grades. I've been taking this test all day. I've been working 8 hours. I've been in this test, and you haven't graded me today.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you go, I must be doing okay. So I must be getting an A. So when the promotion comes, you know this one. The promotion comes, you go, I must have an A. I got to have an A, right? And then somebody goes, they give somebody else the promotion. Where did they come from? They didn't even take the same test I took. How come they get to be promoted?
Well, that's one of the pitfalls of work, is that there's not an answer key to what the right answer is. Everybody's job is different. You are not in the same class with everybody. I mean, there might be some people that have a similar role to what you have, but, you know, it's not apples to apples.
Right.
It really is about, you know, and I've been in these meetings where it's like, okay, we've got, you know, four potential promotions to vice president, and we've got 125 people in the department, and, you know, maybe there's 10 of us on the leadership team, and I would have to come in and make a business case to my colleagues for somebody on my team to get promoted, right? It wasn't just up to me, right? And so I mean, people need to understand this. Nobody ever tells you this stuff.
Right.
I mean, I feel like I've always been pretty good at kind of coming into new situations and kind of sizing up what was going on. But there was a lot of, I mean, I came from a blue collar background, so I didn't have anybody to say, this is what they talk about in the boardroom. But I did have a boss that at one point really mentored me, and he started pulling back the curtain and saying, well, this is what's really going on. Cause I'd say, like, why are those two not like on the same page? And he's like, cause they are both competing for the next level up job. Right. So they don't want to help each other. Yeah. And I was like, what? You know, kind of like what I was saying earlier, like, that's not how it should be.
Right.
But guess what? We work with humans. Right. and they're not selfless. You've got to think about, you know, like, what could their possible motivation be, and really think about all the options and how you might influence, I don't know. I might have gotten off of track.
No,
here,
no, you're good. This is a good point. And by the way, it's awesome because I feel everything that you're saying. Her name is Terry Boyle McDougall. The book is entitled Winning the Game of Work, Career Happiness and Success on Your Own Terms. It's outstanding. She's outstanding. You know what? You're listening to her here in A New Direction. Hey, folks, listen, Epic Physical Therapy. I can't talk about them enough. I love them. Heidi, Andrew, the whole team over there. Listen, they offer the most advanced top of the line equipment, the Alter G anti-gravity treadmill, the Normatec compression sleeves, my favorite, the Game Ready. Listen, they're certified in the most cutting edge treatments like blood flow restriction therapy, dry needling, cupping. That's just a few. When you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, your epic results, don't look any further. Go to epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft Team Realtors. Listen, they've been helping people transition their lives, right? Not just selling a house or buying a house, because it seems that every time if you're moving up into a house, it's a life transition. If you're downsizing, you've had a life transition. Every time that you buy or sell real estate, especially residential real estate, houses that you live in, it's a transition of life. They want to help you with your transition. They've been doing it successfully for thousands of people for over 37 years. Those experts want to help you transition your life. Just go to lindacraft.com. It's lindacraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with my friend Terry McDougall. And hopefully you're enjoying the show. I'm enjoying.
Listen, you know, talking and sharing ideas, having, you know, interesting conversations. This is what I'm all about.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. This is fun. This is a lot of fun for me. I'm sitting here, I'm going, oh, this is fantastic. I know I've taken the notes and everything like that, but it's really fun to kind of interact with you on this. Let's move on to chapter three. what's your objective? Figuring out what you want. There's a couple things in this chapter that I want you to talk about. The very first one is a subheading called Owning Your Emotions. I opened up the show talking about it, but talk about the importance of owning your emotions when it comes to winning the game at work.
Well, it's very common for people to say that person made me mad, or, you know, they make me happy, or whatever. And nobody can make you feel anyway.
Thank
right?
you. Like our emotions, thank you.
Our emotions come from our beliefs. And, you know, I know a lot of people might be skeptical about this, but if you want to test it in your own life, think about it this way. I mean, I'm married, I've got kids, and there have been many situations where, say, me and my husband are out someplace and maybe there's something going on in a restaurant at the table next to us. And you know, I might be like, oh, my God, did you just see what happened? And my husband's like, yeah, what's the big deal? Right? There's a reason why we have different reactions to something that we both witnessed. It's because we've got different beliefs. And those different beliefs are based on our different life experiences. And if you don't like the emotion that you have in a certain situation, you can't say, oh, I'm gonna try to have that person not make me mad.
Right.
Like, you can't make any changes at the level of willpower. You've got to go down, and I say this to clients all the time when they have like a reaction that they're not happy or they would like to change. I say, well, what was the thought that you had right at that like split second before you blew up mm-hmm. at your coworker or before you started crying or whatever? What was that thought? Because that's where you can change your response. You know, and it could be, I mean, you mentioned Shelly, who was a boss that I had who was like extremely toxic and crazy. And for a long time, I was very angry about her. I felt very threatened. And I realized at some point that she wasn't going to change. I had to change. And once I changed, and when I changed like the beliefs about what was going on, because I kept thinking like, you know, my belief was she shouldn't be this way, right? And that because she is this way, I'm going to be angry because this is not fair. I kept thinking things like that. And I was just like going home, like drinking half a bottle of wine every night, which isn't good because I was so stressed out at work. And I finally realized that she's not going to change.
Right.
So what can I change? I can change my belief around her, which is she's my boss. As much as I hate reporting to her, she has the right to tell me what to do. And I also started thinking that, you know, this isn't going to be good for me if I keep having this be very adversarial. So what can I do about this? I had to grit my teeth every morning to do this, but I started, instead of avoiding her, going to her door, knock, hi, good morning, how are you today? I started doing that. I hated it. But what I found was that when I changed that behavior, which, you know, I guess my thought under that was that, you know, I need to demonstrate some cooperativeness.
Right.
You know, I need to do something different. It changed everything.
Right.
All of a sudden, she's like popping into my office. Hey, I want to run an idea by you. She stopped bullying me. Unfortunately, she started bullying somebody else in the department.
Right.
But the heat was off of me. And I actually, I'm not going to say I liked her because I thought she was a bit crazy and not fit to be a boss. But I kind of saw her as a human being after that. And I now looking back, I realized she was under a lot of pressure. She probably wasn't really fit for the role. And I can feel some empathy for her now. But it took me taking responsibility for my own emotions and getting curious about what's making me feel so defensive.
Right.
And what can I do to change that? And once I changed it, it took me being, you know, having some humility and going and treating her like a human being.
Well, I mean, well, but
hi, how are you?
Well, but there's two things at work, and you talk about them both. One is that you have control over your responses, how you're going to respond. You can't control that. And then the second thing is that you changed your mindset, which changed your emotions, which mm-hmm. changed your behavior. Even though you didn't feel like it, you had a thought process yes. that you were working to change that emotion to conduct the behavior. Yeah.
It was hard to do it at first,
right?
Right, because and I mean, any habit is like this, right? Like that, I mean, you're so much more trained in this than I am, but it's all about, you know, we have these like neural pathways that are carved in our brains over time. Like we, you know, we always drive this way to the store or whatever. And it takes a little extra effort if you want to change something, right? You might like, or maybe if you move, like if you transition to a new home, like maybe automatically you're going to take that left towards your old house and you're going to have to like be really conscious, like, oh, at this moment, or you're going to take the left and you're going to be like, oh, I got to turn around and go the other way. But the more that we're like, we consciously think about like, oh yeah, I know that I want to think something different here. Like right. automatically, we're going to probably think that old thing. But then when we catch ourselves and we say, oh yeah, I wanted to replace that belief with something different. When we do that, and then we're going to behave differently. And the more that we do that, the more we're carving a new neural pathway. And it gets easier over time. Well, but in the beginning, it's going to be a little bit hard.
Okay, so I just was speaking to a group of elite 16 under female hockey players about this last night. It's just so coincidentally that you talk about this. That we have carved a set, generally, of negative neural pathways in our brain. And if we're going to change that, it's going to require a lot of intention on our part. Yeah. By the way, you can't go to the gym one day and expect to be in great shape or that your body's going to change. You have to go to the gym consistently and you have to work it constantly in order for that to change, right? Nobody will disagree with that.
Right.
The same is true of our neural pathways. Because we, for, you know, however you've lived long, you've lived your life, ladies and gentlemen, right? You've created a set of neural pathways. Generally, our default is negative, right? Which means that we judge people and we, right?
Sure.
So now you've got, so now you've got to go into the gym. And guess what? You have got to exercise just like you did with Shelly. The first time you went to the gym, oh my gosh, the first time you started that mental mindset, it was hard and you felt a little sore about it. But then day after day, you keep practicing, you go into the gym, you keep practicing, you keep working out that mindset. What happens to your neural pathways? They become easier.
Yes, absolutely. And I was rewarded too.
And then you become rewarded, right? That's the point.
Yes. Yeah. You know, no longer was she, you know, was I under, you know, she wasn't trying to grind me down. And you know, now I realize like,
look at you.
Like I said, I think she was insecure, right?
Right.
She was under a lot of pressure.
Right. You see her in a different light, right? Yeah. Way different than what you saw her before.
Yes.
And you're not angry at her anymore. Matter of fact, you probably even feel a little sorry for her. You probably do feel a little sorry.
I have empathy for her.
Right.
And it's probably one of the best lessons. It wasn't my favorite lesson that I learned in my career, but it was probably one of the best lessons because, you know, I talk about this in the book that it was my choice to come in loaded for bear every day. Because I was super defensive and ready to like, you know, react to any little thing. And the funny thing is like the whole story with her is that, you know, I mentioned that she stopped bullying me and started bullying somebody else. Right. And she really took it over the line with that person to the point that she got fired. And I remember sitting at my desk a little bit after five and the message light came on, which, you know, that's when they send out like a blast voicemail. And so I pick up the phone and listen to the message and it's the head of the department who was in a different city sharing with us that she was no longer with the company. And I was like, oh my gosh, like what do I do with these big guns now that I came in to work with every day? Like I was so defensive. And then I was like, I didn't need to do that. Right. I didn't need to go home and drink half a bottle of wine every night. You know, it was really within my own control to be like, okay, I'm leaving work and I'm leaving all my worries behind when I go home. I didn't have to be that defensive.
I chose
to be.
Right. I thought it was interesting because this all comes from chapter five when you're dealt a bad hand coping with toxic work situations. That the first thing that you quote, because there's, by the way, folks, there's a couple things in this book you should know. First of all, there's a quote that sets up each chapter. But then at the end of the chapters, she puts you through exercises that will actually help you work through the work. But I've got to do this because I love Reinhold Niebuhr, because it's the Serenity Prayer, and you have that right here. When you're dealt a bad hand, God grant me the serenity to accept the things that cannot change, courage to change the things that can, and wisdom to know the difference. And I thought it was awesome that you would use that as your quote, because it really talked about you changing you.
Yes.
And because you were in control of that change.
Yeah. I couldn't change her.
Right.
But the interesting thing is that when I changed my behavior, it did change how she interacted with me. Right. And, you know, so often we just want to be like, they should change. They should do something different. We can't control other people. Mm. You can't even as a parent, you can't control your kids.
Right.
as much as we'd like to.
Right.
You know, or we even try to, but you can't control them. You can't control other people.
Yeah.
You can only control yourself.
And that may be a good place, because we've been on an hour.
Wow.
It's gone really fast. Tell people how they can get a hold of you, Terry.
You can go to my website, terrybmcdougall.com, and check me out. There's some chapters from the book there. And if you would like to get on a free exploratory call, you can set up time there. I'm also very active on LinkedIn. I'm at Terry B. McDougall. That's my handle on LinkedIn. You can check me out there as well.
That's awesome. She's awesome, wasn't she, folks? I told you she would be, right? The book is fantastic. Winning the Game of Work. Get yourself a copy. I'm telling you, it's going to be good. There'll be on the blog write-up for the show. That'll be up in an hour from now when we do this live. We'll have backlinks to the book and to Terry as well, so that you can get more information. Folks, that's the show. You know what I say to you every week? You're in control of three things: your attitude, your effort, and getting back up again. Doesn't matter what the circumstances are. Doesn't. It absolutely does not matter. I know it can be difficult. I know it can be hard. I know it can be a challenge. But you're always in control of those three things. Terry's even said so to support it. I'll be back next week. It's going to be another great guest. It's going to be another great book. It's going to be another great show. And as they say to you all over the world, thank you so much. And ciao, everybody. Your dreams will take you places you have never been before. Find your passion, find your strength. Don't worry.